Now on News Talk, as part of the documentary on News Talk series, producers Morris and Sean take a look back at the campaign for marriage equality and the impact it had 2 years on after the landmark marriage referendum in Imagine Equality.
I'm Colm Tobin and I'm voting yes in the marriage referendum on Friday. I'm 60 this year and I'd like to be able to tell someone who was gay and who was 15, look, you have full equality in this country. The people of this country have voted for you to have full equality because they care about your happiness.
My name is Una Mullally, I'm a journalist. I'm going to be voting yes in the marriage referendum because I think that all citizens in our republic should be treated equally.
My name is David Norris. I'll be voting yes because this is the last stage in a lifetime journey. When I was young, I was defined as a criminal. I've been through all that, getting rid of the criminal law, building on human rights, and this is the last peg. This is the first thing that says, yes, you're equal.
My name is Senator Ivana Bacik. I'm voting yes because I believe in a more equal Ireland. It seems to me it's a human right, the right to marry. For too long, we've excluded gay couples from entering that right to marry. I think it's caused a lot of hardship and misery over the years, and I think it's time we addressed that and achieved equality for everyone.
My name is Evie Nihulawan, and I'm a presenter and maths educator. I'll be voting yes because for me, it's a very simple premise. I don't see why I should be any different because I didn't happen to be born gay. I don't see why my friends should be treated any differently because they were born gay. And to me, it's just simply a matter of civil equality.
In 2015, we made a short podcast series where we spoke to a number of well-known people about why they were voting yes in the referendum on marriage equality.
In this documentary, we catch up with some of those contributors again to reflect on the campaign and the outcome of the referendum. We also speak to LGBT journalists, activists, and mental health practitioners to consider the impact the referendum had on people's lives.
My name is Brian Finnegan and I'm the editor of GCN, which is Ireland's LGBT magazine. Well, I thought it was really interesting even before that Ireland suddenly starts talking about homophobia because of what happened on the Brendan O'Connor show with Rory O'Neill or Panty. I had never seen that before anywhere in the media, anywhere in the world media, and we would keep an eye on the world media around LGBT issues. And suddenly this small little island on the edge of the planet was talking about homophobia and what that was and whether it was libelous to call somebody a homophobe and what being homophobic meant. And it was a very interesting thing to see Middle Ireland talk about those things that we don't really talk about. We talk about gay issues or gay rights, but we don't really talk about the impact of homophobia on individuals or on a community or a group of people. So even before the campaign began or the referendum was announced, we were talking on a level that I had never seen before in the media here or anywhere else. Well, the good thing about us is that we didn't have to be balanced. We weren't subject to those rules. So we reported only from an unbalanced point of view, which is that we sought LGBT equality. We sought equality for all citizens of Ireland. And there were certain gay commentators in the media who were really out there with their anti-marriage views and quite conservative and, I would say, internalised homophobic view of marriage equality. And they were asking me for a space within GCN to put their point of view forward. And I consistently refused. And the reason I refused was everywhere in the media, there was this idea of balance. And that idea of balance was actually unbalancing. It felt unbalanced. It felt that there was not enough. We never got to speak. We never got to say, you know, all of those years that we were hidden and quiet and marginalized, we never got to speak. And suddenly now we got to speak up for ourselves on every platform. And we had to be counterbalanced. Our human rights had to be counterbalanced. And that felt all wrong to me. And it felt all wrong to many, many people. So I felt that GCN was a safe space. It was our community, is our community magazine. It is read mostly by people from the LGBT community. And I would not allow that false sense of balance to infiltrate its pages. I couldn't separate myself personally from it. It was a deeply personal thing for me to fight for my equality, to have to fight for my equality originally and all the time, and still I believe there never should have been a referendum. The Irish people should not have voted whether I should have equal rights or not. I think, I suppose, paradoxically, the effect of that was empowering. We didn't expect it to be empowering. We thought we have to go out and ask, we have to knock at doors and say, please give us. But the campaign itself, and I suppose what the reaction of the community and the galvanisation of the community in various different ways around the campaign, allowed us to kind of transcend that idea of having to ask and to state and to come to those doors and state our equality rather than say, please give us our equality. So if you think about it, you know, there's not many populations or countries of people that go door to door saying, I have equal rights, I deserve equal rights, you know, I want my equal rights. And so that was an empowering thing, and to see it across the country, to see the level of canvassing that was done, the level of self-organisation of groups around the country, you know, with Yes Equality at the apex of that, it was amazingly empowering. And also to see the cohesiveness of the community, because the community obviously was divided before the campaign around the ways that we would get marriage equality. There was a division in opinion from different organisations. So the galvanisation of those community organisations, and then a sense of a galvanising within the community itself. The toughest parts of the fight, from my perspective, actually were not to do with the larger thing, which was like the posters or the, you know, the pundits in the media saying pretty awful things or denigrating, you know, I'm a gay parent, and denigrating my ability to parent. You know, I expected all of that to have a negative impact on me, but it was far more personalised and far more base level for me, and it was surprising to me the way it came. And the way it came was through a neighbour of my parents who was a friend of our family and has been a friend of our family and was very kind to me as a child, who constantly was calling in to my parents and saying, you have to vote no, this is wrong, you know, God and, you know, ordained that man should be with woman, all of this stuff, really super conservative stuff. And my parents have a gay son who they love, and they were having to listen to this, but also it was their friend and it was their history and our community, and so they were feeling that they couldn't stand up for me. They were dreading her arriving. They were worried that other people on our street felt the same, because, you know, they're all of the same, you know, it's the country, I'm from Sligo, they're all, you know, of the same age, they all go to mass, you know, that there's they're of that generation. So they were worried that their friends would vote no. And that really impacted me, because it was really sad to see my parents actually suffering because of homophobia. I had been the one that I thought had suffered because of homophobia. But to see my parents suffer on my behalf was really quite painful. Another part of my personal feelings are wrapped up in voting day, because I went with my neighbours, a lesbian couple who have two children. And their children were so worried. You know, they're 10 and 7, and they were so worried. They were like going, what if they vote no? You know, they were seeing the posters. There were people standing outside the schools handing out flyers. They were really, like children, really worried about this thing. And I just thought it was awful to see children have to worry about this thing, you know, that their family might be voted against by Ireland, you know. And their parents were kind of talking about ways that they may work with the children on the day that if it was a no, what they would do. So they had bought in sweets, and they were going to have a small party saying we're a great family, and to kind of endorse their own family. So it was quite sad to see those children go through that, and sad to see their parents go through that on behalf of their children, and watch their children live in doubt of their value as a family. And so I went with them to vote on the day, and their 10-year-old put in our votes into the ballot box, and that all of us were crying. It was a really moving, I'm actually quite moved even talking about it. It was a very moving moment, and it was what it was about, really. I don't particularly want to get married myself. I don't feel any need to get married. But it was about the value of that family and the value, my value as a person who could form a family. It was a wonderful moment. We all went for breakfast beforehand. Their aunt was there as well. And we had a lovely breakfast. And then we all went up and voted and the kids put in the ballots. And it was a really lovely moment and a scary moment, because it was then up to the gods, we thought. Because up to Saturday morning, really, up to 9 o'clock on Saturday morning, we still thought, oh, well, you just don't know. I was always worried that it would be a no. You could not take it for granted. We have grown up, all of us have grown up in the shadow of homophobia, and homophobia has cast a long shadow over every one of our lives in ways that we don't even know, on a subconscious and fundamental way. We don't even know the damage that has done. But it was clear and present that in the lead up to that referendum, to me, that it could go to the no side, because how could I believe it could go to the yes side, because of the history that I'd had and the history of homophobia in the world. I was in the RDS in the morning for the count, and I think Bundoran came in first, and the word went around like wildfire around the RDS, Bundoran has voted yes, and then we were like, yeah, okay, we won. And I was looking at all the yes votes coming out, and David Quinn had conceded was the next thing that we heard, and so the place was euphoric, and different people were arriving. David Norris arrived, different people were, you know, it was being amped up. It was one of the best days of my entire life. I was with my closest friends, straight and gay, and we celebrated ourselves and our lives, and we danced till the very early hours of the morning, and I'll never forget that euphoria and the sense of validation at last.
My name is Evie Nihulawan, and I'm assistant professor in the School of Mathematics and Statistics in ECD. It's really nice to reflect on that now, because obviously the result went the way that we wanted to. And I thought it was a great time to be a young person in Ireland. First of all, I'm obviously not from Dublin, but I went canvassing in Dublin and I met people that I wouldn't have met, and I did it with my friends that I probably wouldn't have spent the evening with otherwise. And that was a really good insight, because it really gave a sense of community isn't dead in Ireland, because everybody's just giving up their free time to do this, and that was lovely. And not every person that you met was enthusiastic, let's say, and that was a little bit disappointing. But generally, people were quite friendly at the doors, and I think that that gave me a positive sense that it was going to go well. I was worried about rural Ireland, and I was worried about home. And I canvassed outside our church in Carnacoon. I'd put a poster up on the phone box, and I had all outrights with my mother about this, you know, where we hung up on each other, because we both felt very strongly on opposite sides. But at the end, we came to a common agreement where she was just like, oh, I just realised that this could be any of you guys.
I thought we could lose it. The no side used such dishonest techniques, and they completely dismissed and treated with contempt the independent examiner, or whatever they called him, the judge, and his team. They created all these kind of red herrings about adoption, which had already been fixed. There was nothing the referendum could do about it. It was there anyway. And surrogacy and any kind of red herring they could find. I voted, as I always do, in the central model schools. And then the next day, for the count, we went off out to the count in Simmons Court. You know, anybody who knows elections, and of course, I've been in so many elections in Trinity with the ballot papers, and you just take a glance and you can tell what the situation is pretty early on. And I have to say, within about 15, 20 minutes, I knew we'd won. It was absolutely obvious. You know, so the rest of it was just seeing what the scale of the victory was. But it was an absolutely wonderful feeling. And there was a real buzz in the hall in Symonds Court. We then came into to Dublin Castle, and it's all kind of a blur, really. But I remember going up on the lorry to be interviewed, and people called for a speech, and I had no microphone, and just in the open air, in a huge space, so I just kind of shouted.
The crowd was ecstatic, the looming win overwhelming and beyond all expectation. The journey here wouldn't have been possible without this man. David Norris was Ireland's first gay activist and fought for decades to overturn homosexuality's criminal status.
The message from this small independent republic to the entire world is one of dignity and freedom and tolerance, liberté, fraternité, égalité. Thank you!
Well, it was wonderful seeing so many ecstatically happy faces. Seeing the colour of the banners and the fact that the courtyard of Dublin Castle was absolutely jammed. It was a remarkable, unique and historic moment, and I certainly won't forget it. I mean, one of the most moving things was all the young people who came back from abroad. I mean, not just from London, but from Canada, from New York, from even from Australia. I mean, that was immensely moving, that people came. Last night, I had a taxi, a very nice young lad driving the car, and he was talking about his brother, telling his parents that he was gay and all this, and how much the referendum meant to his brother. And then there was the whole question of Ursula Halligan coming out. I've known Ursula for years. I've always respected her. I think she's a very, very fine, very decent journalist, and there are damn few of them. I'd no idea she was gay. Never struck me. And that was wonderful. I mean, Leo Varadkar coming out was very interesting as well, because when I was young, there were absolutely no role models at all. And now there are. I mean, people can see that in political life, you can be a leading political figure, somebody who's respected right across the board of the political parties and so on, and be gay. The one thing I would say is we've got to look out now to the rest of the world, where it's extremely dangerous for people in many, many, many countries to be gay. I mean, they're persecuted, they're discriminated against, they're harassed, they're tortured, they're murdered. I mean, just for being gay, it's absolutely appalling. And one of the worst aspects of it, in my opinion, as a Christian, is that in places like Uganda and Kenya, the Christian churches are actually leading the oppression of gay people.
My name is Senator Ivana Bacik. It was interesting that when you look at other countries around the world, we were the first in Ireland to have voted for marriage equality or to have brought about marriage equality by way of a constitutional referendum. Every other country where we've seen marriage equality legalised, it's been either through a court case or through a legislative decision, in other words, a decision of the Parliament. So it was very interesting that we approached it this way. Many of us, including myself, many lawyers, have been critical of Irish policy making through constitutional referendum in the past on the basis that it sort of lets legislators off the hook. You know, on the other hand, as with marriage equality, when it is an important expression of public view on a social issue, it can be a very heartening process, and it means really the people are entirely with you. It gives the result, I suppose, a an authoritativeness or a kind of a weight and a basis that it wouldn't have if it had come about perhaps through a court decision. But, you know, having said that, I still think there's a lot of other of deeper philosophical issues to discuss around whether it's better to make to bring about social change through legislation rather than through constitutional referendum.
My name is Owen Deepardoon.
I was incredibly nervous. I had the real clear realisation that what we were actually asking people to do wasn't just go and vote yes and celebrate people, but was kind of going, I'm actually inviting you to come judge my life. And that actually quite disturbed me, that I saw all these campaigns, I saw all these promotions, all these wonderful speakers, and what we actually were doing is come and judge my life. And that really changed the tone for me. How bizarre is it to feel that you're going, listen, I want to be treated as you are, so I'm actually asking you, inviting you and pleading with you at times to come actually and judge me. And I found that horrific. I voted after work. Myself and my partner actually went to vote together. Some people did vote, some members of my family didn't vote at all. But yeah, God, it's really serious. Like, we looked at the world and said, hello world, how much do you value people? How much do you value the love that may not fit your idea of it, or what the media and the religions and all the kind of structures are actually telling you? And I'm happy how it turned. And it did turn, and it was such a, oh, it really was a relief. It was absolutely such a relief. I am horrified that was even a question, but how relieved are we all that the world we're moving into and growing up in and expressing is a far more truthful one, because it's truthful to who we are. It was ordinary people having ordinary lives, just wanting to have ordinary rights. Nothing special, nothing new, it's just the idea of how radical it would be if we actually were all held equal. Imagine equality.
You're listening to Imagine Equality on News Talk 106 to 108.
My name is Gráinne Healy and I'm the Chairwoman of Marriage Equality Ireland, and I was also co-director of the Yes Equality campaign. So in 2003, Catherine Zapponin and Louise Gilligan had been married in Canada, and they took a case here in Ireland to have their marriage recognised. A number of us gathered around them to provide support for the case they were taking. I mean, they were two very well-known, very middle-class public women who were going out as lesbians, and it was a huge thing in Ireland at the time. I think it shocked the nation that there were these two middle-aged lesbian women who wanted their marriage recognised. So very quickly, we realised that we needed more than just a support campaign for Catherine and Louise, and so a number of us formed what became Marriage Equality. So that was moving out from an individual court case, which was just one strategy, to try to build a sense of both the demand for, the need for, and the idea that marriage equality was something that really was about human rights and civil rights. So the 10 years of the campaign was about doing that. So it was about getting political support, working with politicians, getting people to go in and sit down with our politicians. We had our Out to Your TD campaign, where people went in and just said, you know, this is an issue for us. So I suppose the 10 years leading up to the Yes Equality campaign was launched in March of 2015, but certainly the visibility work, the public support, teasing out what messages, what were the concerns people had, if people were resistant to it, what were they resistant about, and dealing with those issues, so that by the time we got to a referendum campaign, we had all of that groundwork done. Well, Marriage Equality started doing research back in 2004, and at that stage 48% of the population were saying they would vote yes. We were particularly interested in the middle ground people, people who, if you raised issues with them, originally they would say, yes, we'll vote yes. And then when you said, well, what about children? They go, oh, yeah, well, actually, I think I'll probably vote no. So we wanted to focus on those. And really, that's what we did. That really significant piece of research was a Red Sea poll followed by focus groups. And those focus groups told us that men over 45 were least likely to vote yes. Women all across ages and sectors were hugely in favour. Almost everyone to a man and a woman under 35 was a yes voter. Farmers in the West and those over 65 were least likely to vote yes. So we had a sort of a 30% dyed-in-the-wool yes equality voters. We were going to use social media to keep them activated. We had 30% ideologically opposed to us, and our decision was we weren't going to go after them. So we had decided we weren't going to have stand-up head-to-head arguments with the David Quinns from Iona or whoever it might be. So our focus was on this, what we call the million in the middle. And the million in the middle wanted to hear, our focus groups told us, from other people like themselves. They wanted to hear from grandmothers. They wanted to hear from parents who perhaps were mass-going Catholics, but they discovered their son or daughter was gay, and they were saying, I love my kids, and, you know, they will beat me going to Mass any day. And people really liked that. They liked that idea that this was about real people with real families. And, you know, in many ways, was it a gay rights issue? It was, but the campaign always presented it as this was about love and it was about equality. And that really did come through from the research that we did. And that's how we came up with the Yes Equality as the name for the campaign. Irish people expect to be canvassed in all instances. So my mother would say, well, I'm not going down to vote on this. Nobody came to ask me for my vote. Peculiar politics, but that's the truth of it. So we, I think, knew and understood this. The key thing that we used was, instead of telling people how to vote, that we would knock on doors and we would start a conversation by saying, hello, my name is Gráinne. I'm from the Yes Equality campaign. Can I tell you why I'm voting yes? So I think the canvassing as a something you have to do, the kind of training we did was all about getting people to prepare their own personal story as to why they were voting yes. And that again took us back into all those values. Some people were doing it just because they believed in equality. Some people were doing it because they loved their son or their brother or their mother. Other people were doing it because they wanted to live in an Ireland that was inclusive. So all of those values that again we had identified in the research were so important. We were trying in the campaign to reflect those values back to the electorate. So there was a feel-good factor about being involved in the campaign, and I think we saw that in the result and on the day in Dublin Castle, and indeed around the country and around the world, where people just felt, I mean, Maureen Gaffney spoke at something during the summer, and Maureen Gaffney, psychologist and commentator, said that actually the LGBT community had given the whole of Ireland a gift by allowing them to have a day where they showed themselves to be in their best light. Our fear maybe in the last month was that we'd peaked. And the other thing that people who, when we had an advisory group, they were saying things to us like, you know, you can piss off the electorate by being in their face too much. So in the last few weeks, we actually took the pedal off the gas, as it were, and we knew that what we would need to do was spend time getting the vote out. So Brian would have led that get out the vote end of the campaign in the last couple of weeks, and I think that was hugely important for all of us in terms of the realisation that who voted on the day would swing it. But you know, I was very worried at the number of people who were calling it a bit like the Brexit thing, oh yeah, it's going to be a shoe-in. I never for a moment thought it was going to be a shoe-in. The night when all the people came home through Dublin Airport, that home to vote, which was nothing to do with the campaign. That was entirely a self-organic movement. And there were photographs of people coming in at the pier in Dunleary and coming in up in Dublin Airport. And it was the night before the vote itself. And I didn't get much sleep those months, but certainly those couple of nights. And I saw the image come in over the Twitter feed, and the tears came for the first time.
The Irish people who are returning home to vote are all people who've left within the past 18 months, so they're eligible to vote. Other people who are disenfranchised after 18 months are coming back to support it. There's some English people who are friends of friends coming home to support it too here. It's a hugely emotive thing. A lot of Irish emigrants do plan to return to their country, so they want it to be a more welcoming place that they can be proud of.
I'm still very nervous. I have moments where I picture if we're standing there at 3 p.m. tomorrow afternoon and by a small margin we don't get a yes vote, so we get a no vote. And so that still fills me with nerves.
There could be some secret no voters in our midst, but as far as I'm aware, everyone travelling with us today is voting yes. And I'm not aware of any organised campaign to get no voters home. They may well be coming home to vote, but I haven't encountered any.
For me, when I marched last August with my friends in Dublin in the March for Marriage, I really did hope that it would be the last time that we'd walk in the streets of Dublin and that I would have more rights than my gay friends.
Firstly, I thought, Jesus, if we lose this, I'm going to have to move out of this country. And on the other hand, if we win it, it will have been tremendous. There was that thing of, on the one hand, you had to keep the heart up that, yes, we're going to win and this is why we're going to win. But in those private moments when you looked into your own soul, no, I was never absolutely certain until the ballot boxes started to open on the day. It was incredible. I was out on RTE doing an interview. We were on that morning programme, and literally within the first 3 minutes, the 9 o'clock news came on, the boxes were open and they started calling it, oh, definitely it's a landslide. And I'm sitting there and they're saying, well, what do you think? And I said, well, I'm not calling it until the vote is in, but there are people here who are calling it. And I guess it's just reflective of what we have actually discovered on the doors, that, yeah, people wanted this and they have come out in large numbers. I don't think we ever thought that the final figures would be as high as they were. But again, that was a feature of the turnout. You know, very high turnout, high 60s, and then getting, you know, 62% to actually say yes.
Votes in favour of the proposal, 1,201,000.
Dublin Castle, the thousands who have gathered there during the day to hear this result, to celebrate this result. Yes campaigners and yes supporters, politicians and voters, and those who got involved in this campaign, perhaps for the first time they've become involved in a political campaign, greeting this result with cheers and flag waving. And you can clearly see the joy on the faces of those who've joined them there this evening for that vote. Confirmation that the vote in favour of the marriage equality referendum, 1,201,000.
No one can call Ireland a Conservative country now. This is the moment it became official. The counting complete, confirmation the Irish people had decisively voted to include same-sex marriages in their constitution. It came at the end of a long, emotional...
I can't actually describe what's going on right now. It's probably the most amazing night of my life. I'm crying all day. I'm so proud to be Irish, and I'm so proud to be gay today.
I'm out celebrating tonight and having fun. I'm just celebrating the great day that it is. I felt I was the only gay in the village, but you know what? Suddenly I realised I'm not.
It's just a real kind of free, friendly atmosphere around the town.
My son is gay and I'm just so happy for him. I'm not here usually on a Saturday night, but I feel that there's a really feel-good factor, and I feel there's a really goodwill that has never been felt before. We're all
It is useful to reflect on some of the results, outputs, outcomes of a referendum campaign that was run in a very positive manner. So when you're running something in a positive manner and it's all about saying yes and it's all about inclusion and equality and fairness, there isn't much space to have conversations with people about the kind of abuse maybe they got on the door last night, or reading things in newspapers, opinion pieces. And I was involved in conducting a study where 1,600 people who were around in Ireland and were here when the referendum campaign was run, and they were invited to share their experiences of what the No campaign felt like for them. And it's quite shocking, the things that came in the survey, with people saying things like, you know, being really hurt that maybe their brother had decided that he was voting no, working in small rural communities where once they went out knocking on doors, they were coming out to the whole community and there was no going back in. And not all of the community either liked or welcomed the fact that they had come out. So people's mental health suffered. Particularly, I mean, we knew in the campaign we had set up a team of therapists, psychologists, who were offering support to people who had been canvassing and who had had negative experiences. Many of the first batch of people who took up that support, they were straight people who I think were genuinely shocked that you'd open a door and you'd say, can you tell you why I'm voting yes? And someone would say, F off, you faggot, or they would be really, really obnoxious and horrible to them. And I think as a straight person, it must be incredible, because you know, you're thinking things like, oh, Irish people are good and we're all going to win this referendum. And then you start knocking on doors and you realise that's not the case at all. So for LGBT people, who this is how we live our lives and we try to avoid that, putting yourself in the way of it night after night. And some people went out knocking on doors right through March, April, into May. That's a lot of knocking. And for many, a lot of abuse. So it was that, also the commentary on people's families, coming out and seeing those posters on their way to work. There was a couple I knew who had two little girls, twins, and one of the posters was put up outside their house in Dunleary, and they were just deeply upset, having to explain to the girls on the way to school, you know, they had two mammies. So what did that mean? Did that mean their family was wrong or they weren't a family? So really big emotional things. So the survey showed, I think, quite clearly that while people got involved and were mobilised, and yes, we won, the impact of that has been huge. And I think that we're probably seeing, I spoke recently to the Psychological Society of Ireland and some of the leaders from there, and certainly the therapists are saying they're seeing some of these people. They're now coming in, you know, to sit in their offices and to have conversations also about, you know, I was part of the campaign and it was a great win, but, you know, there's still this guy who works with me and he's really homophobic and he's horrible to me and it hasn't changed him. Young people who are coming out as gay, thinking, oh, now that we have same-sex marriage, sure, it's a whole brand new Ireland. It's not. I think it has had a really important normative effect, but the lived experience, I think it's still difficult, and particularly for younger people. The other group I would focus on are older people. Older people who, even during the Yes Equality campaign, didn't feel that they could give themselves the permission to come out. They're now still older than they were then. They didn't participate in the campaign. They didn't come out. And in some ways, I think there's a bit of a judgment by straight people in particular. Ah, sure, it's no problem being gay now. Everybody's out. So if you're that person who's working as a senior civil servant in a certain department and you haven't come out, I think you're even lonelier now than you were before that. So I think there are a number of psychological aspects to running a public discussion on people's lives, and we are seeing some of the impacts of that now. It is really a bad idea to be having a vote on the rights of a minority, because if you start having a national conversation on, for example, gay rights, on traveller rights, on whatever they might be, it does give permission to people whose views are uninformed, who might be saying horrible things about people. So for those of us who are lesbian or gay, you hear that conversation in a different way. It's not just an academic debate. So for example, when the No side put up their posters, which said every child deserves a mother and a father, they not only upset lesbian and gay parents, they accept lone parents, they upset men and women who had raised children because they were widows or widowers. So they really poked a hornet's nest that I don't think that they expected. But for those of us who have children, for those of us who are in LGBT-headed families, that whole discussion was very, very hard to hear. And while at the time we were all being our happy, positive selves in the campaign, there's no doubt that, you know, the win was important, but it has left its scars and its marks. And that's the problem with referenda campaign. It's yes or no. And the arguments, some see them as academic, some think it gives them a right to say things. But ultimately, this was about our lives and whether or not we were equal. And I had done some study over the previous years, and I interviewed couples who'd had civil partnerships for my research. And every one of those couples, unasked for, when I asked them what was the meaning of their civil partnership, they said it was about belonging. And I feel that, yes, equality and the campaign, at the end of the day, for LGBT people, the yes vote was about people telling us that we belonged. We were Irish, we were family, we were loved, we were real, we were, you know, all of those things. And belonging is, I would put it up there with Maslow's thing of, you know, food and air and water and shelter. And I would say belonging is the next line. So it's hugely important.
My name is Dilva Krumasinghe and I'm a broadcaster with News Talk, and most importantly, mommy of Phoenix, who's here with us, who's going to be two in May.
I'm Anne-Marie Toole, also mummy of Phoenix, psychotherapist and clinical director of Insight Matters.
Firstly, my gosh, it was a fantastic time in history of Ireland, that's for sure. And like 2015 will go down as a historic year for us as a couple, because that was the year that our son was born, because I was actually pregnant during the referendum, and Phoenix arrived on the Sunday prior to the day of the referendum. He was born on the 17th, and our first family outing was, of course, to vote. So you can just imagine just how emotional that day was for us all. Throughout the campaign, when I was tweeting and, you know, talking openly about my pregnancy, I became a target to quite a lot of abusive attacks on social media, coming from the very head of their own institute as well, which then gave permission to all the people in the No campaign to just come at me. And I found it really quite disturbing that they felt they could do so to a pregnant woman.
It was just too personal. I couldn't distance myself from the fact that these hateful, prejudicial comments were about our family, were about other people's families, and that people didn't have the awareness and the sensitivity to realise the actual impact of what they were saying. And I think this is what was glaringly apparent in the campaign of the No side. It didn't seem to quite sink that when you're making these comments about LGBT people, you are attacking the personhood of either the person you're sitting in front of or somebody down the road, and that's extremely hurtful. It can be traumatic, and that lingers.
And I spoke to so many people who were canvassing and were saying that if for some reason the Yes side didn't win, they would have felt that they would have immigrated.
And it also brought a lot of people back to their original and initial coming out processes and experiences. They're not that comfortable. They're not always necessarily met with warmth and acceptance and love and inclusivity. An awful lot of that was coming up for people as well. And so they had to fight this campaign, continually battle with what they're hearing on the media, and then revisit this very deeply personal and intimate stuff that was going on for them.
And just don't forget, the campaign actually actively encouraged LGBT people to talk to their family members and their friends and their work colleagues. So I'm sure not every single conversation that was had had a positive outcome. I know lots of people who took it upon themselves to talk to their family members, brothers and sisters, and came away heartbroken. Big surprise, because through the campaign I kept telling people, look, if you vote yes, I'm going to invite you to my wedding, you know. And then of course the vote came through. I realized, oh goodness, now we get married, we'll have to book Crow Park at this rate. So we decided to do a pop-up surprise wedding. So people were invited to Phoenix's naming ceremony, and then they were invited back to our house. And of course, when they arrived here, they found a string quartet and a gospel choir and a comedian, and then we literally told people 10 minutes before the ceremony, which was upstairs in our home, and we told Anne-Marie's parents 10 minutes before the service, and it was wonderful. And for us, it was never, like, for us weddings put so much pressure on people, you know, gifts and clothes, and, you know, for us it was just about a celebration of our love.
It was just very much about just Dil and I, and just that, just our relationship, and it was absolutely amazing that everybody was there. But it just really spoke to the love that we share, and just the hopes and dreams we have for our family. For me, do you know where I feel it the most? In the playground with Phoenix, when I'm talking to other mummies or daddies about our family situation, and when now, very naturally and instinctively, it'll just come out. Phoenix's mummy did this the other day with him. She went to a playgroup down the road, or my wife was saying that this is a really good cafe to visit with kids. It's now become much more natural for me to say something like that. I think about it less. And even if before, you always had to think, who am I saying this to? What's the reception I'm going to get? Is it safe? Is it okay? There's still plenty of times I won't say it, For example, if I'm in a taxi cab at 12:30 a.m. alone, will I really disclose that at this point in time? But in the playground, I notice now around him, I'm much more willing to talk about our family situation because the legislation gives me that confidence that if somebody comes back with something homophobic, I can now sit back into that legislation and say, well, actually, we have new laws that prevent you from saying that or prohibit you from saying that. And yeah, this is our situation. And it's great. I can sit into that much more confidently.
Second time around, when we announced the pregnancy, through the Independent did a lovely article on us. We were on the cover of the Living magazine. There was not one single negative comment, either on social media or anywhere else, or even on my show when I talked about it. That is incredible for me. Where, you know, I couldn't have counted the amount of negative messages because there were just thousands. Where here there was not one, and that shows just how powerful a piece of legislation can be.
The referendum is a very good step, but by no means the final conclusion. That LGBT people are still experiencing huge rates of discrimination in other areas, sometimes very overt, but sometimes very implicitly as well. For an LGBT person, because they're born into a heteronormative world and society, that sense of the level of repression or that sense of having to hide or inhibit who they are at their very core, that has effects and repercussions and ripples for the rest of their lives. So no, we're not going to stop talking. We're not going to stop talking about these issues or these problems because they still exist.
Imagine Equality was produced by Sean O'Boyle and Morris Kelleher and was supported by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland. Information and support for the issues raised in this programme can be found on the National LGBT Helpline on 1890 929 539 or by visiting lgbt.ie.